Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and I'm here with Kathy Bailey, the Executive Director of Greater Cincinnati Water Works Department. How's it going?
It's going great.
Good, good. Yes. So I want to know the story here of your Twitter handle, which says First Lady of Water, which I love and I think everybody enjoys. But where did that name come from?
It's a fun name. So in 200 years of the water utility, I am the first woman, the first African-American woman to lead that utility. I think we've had 32 directors before me. And so as we were realizing that, and it was sinking in for me, you know, being a first in that manner, one of my brother-in-laws just said, "Hey, Flo." And then he said, "First Lady of Water." And so as I shared that with some of my employees, they thought it was the coolest thing, thought it was a way to brand, you know, the utility, to certainly brand me now in my role. And so just had some fun with it. So, you know, as I took on this role, I thought, well, how am I going to splurge and celebrate this?
Yeah.
And so I, have a personalized, license plate.
Oh, really?
That says The Flow.
I like it.
And so from there, it just took on.
Yeah.
You know, it just went from there. Council members love it. They refer to me that way. Other people in the city refer to me that way. And so it's just a fun way to certainly be on Twitter with that handle and to just, you know, keep branding me and the organization.
Fun and energizing to people. Yeah.
Very much so.
And you have that, like, First Lady of Water, but then Flo is obviously, I mean, a water word also.
Yes, so it worked very well. So we're just having some fun.
How long have you been executive director?
So I'm approaching 3 years at this point. I've been with the utility 26 years.
Yeah, so we can talk about that now. So you started out with the utility and you've worked your way to the top.
I did. You know, out of college, I went to the University of Cincinnati. And out of college, I did a couple years at USEPA right in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And I was a chemist there. And so then I came over to the city into the water department and I've been there 26 years. Started as a chemist.
Mm.
We had just put our granular activated carbon plant online. And so I was a shift chemist. I worked nights in that.
Wow.
That was my first job with the department. And so I did that for a while, but then I came back to days. I've had several different roles. At one point, I was selected by our CFO to start our help desk. You know, we had an IT help desk that we were putting together.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the days when we were centralizing, you know, our IT solutions and bringing more computers into the organization. So I was involved in that. I've been involved as the performance manager champion. I spent many years in strategic planning, developing the plans as well as implementing and tracking those plans.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a number of roles in the organization, and I appreciate that because it's certainly given me a lot of insight into what we do, how we do it across many divisions. And so I think it's helped me prepare for the role that I'm in now.
And I think probably a lot of the employees appreciate that you've been there, right? You've been in these different spots and you know what's up. And
definitely. I think they do appreciate that. I certainly appreciate it. And our city leaders appreciate that too. You know, it gives them some comfort that I know the history, you know, of us and how we do things and that I'm planning to continue on and only improve from where we are now.
I mean, when you started as a chemist, did you ever envision that you'd be, you know, directing the organization?
I did not. You know, I certainly planned on doing my part, you know, as a member of the team, but I did not see this coming back in those days. I'm happy with it, certainly. But I didn't see it coming.
When did you start to think, oh, maybe I'd like to kind of work my way up there?
You know, I've always been just that person. If something is asked of me, then certainly I'll give it my all. So I've never had that thought that, you know, I can't do this role or I can't do that. Mm-hmm. If they asked me, then certainly I would do it. And so for 3.5 years, we were part of a joint utility. I don't know if you're aware of that, but we were joined with Stormwater and the Sewer Department. Mm. And so we went through that merger. Mm. And then our city manager in 2015 decided to actually separate us. Mm. But during that time, I was the transition manager. I was the main person who had to figure out how to join all the different functional areas. Wow. And so I learned quite a bit in that area as well. So coming out of that is when I was named interim director. And it was only then that I started thinking, do I really want this from a permanent perspective?
Yeah.
And it was actually, believe it or not, it was actually a message at church that was all about, you know, everybody has a certain talent. Ah. And that at the point when your talent is needed, you need to be ready to step up and aggressively pursue that talent and do your best in it. Mm-hmm. And that was my turning point that really said, you know, you're approaching this all wrong. Why are you approaching this that you're just the interim? Approach it as if you are the permanent and aggressively pursue that. Yeah. And so that was it.
I love when those signs and messages come to us at a time when we're searching for something or trying to figure something out, or there's some opportunity in front of us, and then we get that come to us at the right time.
Yes. So that was the moment for me.
And now you're at the top of this utility that provides drinking water for over 1 million people.
Yes. So yeah, we serve about 1.1 million customers in our service area. About 298,000 of those residents are in the city of Cincinnati proper.
Okay.
And so that's probably the area where we, you know, have probably more of the challenges. You know, Cincinnati is an older neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I talk about challenges, certainly, you know, affordability issues, but probably the one that's really at the forefront for us right now is we still have a number of lead service lines left in our system.
And this is part of your Twitter bio, as they call them as well. You say, you know, being a lead-free water crusader.
Yes.
And talk about that. Why is lead kind of at the top of your list?
Well, I think, you know, we're trying to change our perspective on how we solve problems, you know, from the water utility. I think that old perspective was, you know, the community, they have an issue and they need to figure out their issue. But as we have been out in the community trying to share the value of water, trying to let people know what we do, how we do it, when we do it, and kind of allow them to come in and learn so much more about us, then we no longer approach the community as they. We approach it as we. And so as we approach it saying we are the community, then we have a problem. Mm-hmm. And we have a problem with those lead service lines still remaining in our system. Mm-hmm. And so I think having that conversation, having that perspective that we as the community has really changed how we've run after the problem and come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. And so that's a different dynamic that we're working through in the utility. And so as we look at that, we now want to look at the 52 neighborhoods that are in Cincinnati, understand the community more, understand the different characteristics of each neighborhood so that we can come up with a solution per neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us to do the right thing. I think that's just the bottom line. Do the right thing. We've known for years that these lead service lines remain in the system. In fact, when I started in 1992, one of the early projects that I worked on was the lead and copper team. Because the you know, the whole lead and copper rule had just come down.
Came out in 1991, I think.
Right, yeah. 91. We were busy implementing different changes in 1992. And I was part of that team. So 26 years later, here we are still talking about the lead and copper, you know, challenges that we have. For our utility, we've been removing lead service lines since 1971 as a part of our water main replacement program. So if we're out there replacing a water main, then certainly we're removing the public side of the lines, the service lines. We have those conversations with the customers to let them know they should remove the private portion. But then it comes down to them asking the usual questions. Well, yeah, I would like to remove it, but how much does it cost?
Yeah.
You know, and we have said over the years, $3,000, $5,000, mm-hmm. you know, and they say, yikes, I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we go on our way and we remove the public side. And so they haven't been able to replace the private side.
Mm.
And so now we're saying, you know, replacing the public side is not enough. We need to come up with solutions to replace the private side. So our new program is just that. It provides a way for our customers to come into the program and remove their private side. So we help the customers in that manner.
How does that work exactly? I mean, because this has been a program that's gotten a lot of attention and accolades for its aggressiveness and effectiveness and so forth. So, yeah, how does that actually work to get those lines out of there?
So it's a two-tier approach. Tier one is all about the communications and education efforts. So it's the new website. It's our lookup map where people can actually put an address in and find the properties on a map to understand, you know, the material on the public side and the private side. It's free testing. You know, it's all of the social media messages. That's tier one, all about communicating our program and what we're doing to help our customers.
Can I ask you something about that?
Sure.
Being able to look it up on a map. I know one of the big challenges in communities, cities across the country is knowing where these lead service lines are.
Yes.
And not having maps and,
yes.
and just like, geesh, where are these things?
Yes.
And so how do you guys have maps?
So it's been a challenge. We've talked to a number of utilities that are trying to figure out ways to do that. But we have pretty detailed data about our infrastructure. We've had that for many, many years. We like data. We like archives. We actually have some pretty cool archives with data and paperwork dating back to the 1800s about our utility. It's in perfect shape. So it's exciting. So you can imagine the paper, you know, that we have around. Mm. But many, many years ago, we decided to digitize all of those records. And so we have those records available to us. We have GIS staff who actually work to maintain all of our water main layers.
Mm.
And so because of that, we have those GIS layers that we can look at closely to see where all of these lead service lines are.
Yeah, that's enormously helpful for y'all.
It is. So we serve up those maps and other GIS layers so we understand our infrastructure, where we are, what we need to do.
And then, so tier two, this is the removing of the lines.
Yes. So tier two is the removal. And so how it works for us, it's an incentivized program. So as an example, average cost is about $5,000 for the private side removal. Certainly, we'll take care of the public side.
Mm-hmm.
But the private side is an average cost of about $5,000. So our program allows us to give $1,500 towards the customer. So then their balance is $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they can decide to have a 5-year or 10-year property assessment to pay the balance. So that allows them to spread it out over time, which, you know, we felt was extremely helpful for the customer. We also then established a customer assistance program. So that program, right now, it's averaging about a little over $1,000, where customers can get additional money if they qualify from that customer assistance program. So in that example, that $3,500 now goes down to $2,500. Over 10 years, about $250 a year.
20-something bucks
a month. Exactly. 20-something bucks a month. They'll pay about $125 every 6 months. And so at that point, we think it's a little more doable for our customers to afford it. We've rolled out that program, and right now we've contacted those customers where we currently have water main replacement programs going on, you know, letting them know, hey, are you interested in coming into this program? Since January, we've had about 35-36% of those customers that have opted into the program. That's way more than we expected because for some other utilities who've had programs over the years, they've told us, you know, you can expect 8, 9, 10% at most. But that soft launch of our program gives us about 35, 36%. And we haven't fully advertised the program. We're in the process of that now.
Interesting.
So we're excited to see, you know, I think we're excited and a little afraid at the same time. Because, you know, if we have 35, 36% and we haven't done a full launch, this thing could ramp up very quickly.
Yeah. So does that change then your financial planning for managing the program?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely. If it ramps up much quicker than we expected. We certainly have money allocated, you know, for the incentives, certainly for the capital side of replacing the public. The challenge that we have right now with the program is the funding for the customer assistance program. Mm-hmm. If I go back to that whole new approach that we have, that we as a community need to come up with solutions, then we've tried to think outside the box to solve our problems. And in this case, we're using our revenue from cell tower rental. So we, you know, we rent our tower space, our water tank space. So we're using that to fund the customer assistance program. We have an employee payroll deduction arm of this. So that was interesting where I think this year we're slated to have about $8,000 come in from just employees doing an employee payroll deduction,
pretty cool. Part of the community, right? Yes. They see themselves as these are their neighbors, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So as we continue to roll out that program, we're expecting that will increase. We now, again, as part of the community, we've been reaching out to, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, leadership programs in the area, you know, those areas, those groups that can assist us and perhaps want to contribute towards a customer assistance program. So that's kind of where we're focusing right now. We, to date, have about 35 applications that have come into the HELP program. So again, on an average of about $1,000. And I think we started with the employee payroll deduction and the cell tower revenue. We probably had about 210,000, I believe it is. So, you know, 35,000 or so of that already earmarked. And as we ramp up again, that's going to be our bottleneck. Yeah.
And then, so there are companies, contractors then actually come in and do the line replacements.
Yes. So we're working with another aspect of what we want to try to do is, again, as, you know, we as the community, why not use a lot of our local plumbers to contribute to this work and help rebuild our community by removing these lines? And so we're trying to work with plumbers, identify plumbers to come into the program. We've had a little struggle with that. And I think the big struggle is, you know, our procurement process perhaps is not one that aligns with how plumbers are normally paid. You know, usually they do the work and then quickly they're paid by the customer. But in the city, you know, process, it could take 25 to 30 days to cut a check.
Yeah.
And so plumbers often cannot afford, you know, to wait for that.
Sure.
And so we're trying to figure out different creative ways to bring more plumbers into the program. But that's our plan, to try to use more plumbers locally to help rebuild our community.
Let's shift on the lead topic and just, I just want to go back to why this is so important to you. And I think we could talk about the health impacts of lead. You know, I mean, it's something that I think was out of public awareness for a while and thought of something as from an era past maybe, and people didn't realize, and Flint blew the lid off that a little bit.
Yeah, I think why it's important to me is, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do. You know, again, I've always been connected to the community. I've always been connected to education, youth programs, et cetera. And so as I look at some of the dynamics of our 52 neighborhoods, I think we have the second highest child poverty rate in the city of Cincinnati. We know that many of these lead service lines are left in the neighborhoods where there's many people of color, high percentage of people that might be at risk for getting shut off of their water. So there's some affordability issues there. And I just think, you know, it's my role and our role as a utility to figure out ways to address a problem for our community. And clearly this one is directly tied to us because we have those lead service lines there. Mm-hmm. So we define it as, bottom line, it's the right thing to do. You know, let's not wait for the federal government to tell us what we already know is the right thing to mm-hmm. do. So let's come up with a solution now and get busy.
In addition to those neighborhoods and those folks, you know, it's I guess children, you know, that unfortunately get impacted the most by lead in the water. So, I mean, that's just another motivating factor, right?
It's
like, take care of the kids.
Take care of the kids. You know, every child should have an equal opportunity, you know, to start off on the right path.
Yeah.
And having these lead levels as a potential risk is not starting them off with an equal path.
Mm-hmm.
We partner with the health department, mm-hmm. you know, so we know also the lead levels of some of these children in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge. But whatever we can do, let's do our part. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the perspective that we start from. And that's why it's so important at the top of our list.
I know that EPA is working on revising their lead and copper rule, you know, emphasis on the lead part, and thinking about what to do about these lead service lines across the country. And, you know, I see your Cincinnati and other communities like, hey, we're just going to start taking these things out.
Yeah.
Are you all part of giving feedback to EPA about handling lead in drinking water?
We are. So we had, at the time, Administrator Pruitt came to visit us.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting visit. We didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. And I know he also came with Peter Gravatt, who has a drinking water office.
He did. Peter came as well, and we had shared information with Peter prior to them visiting. But it was important, you know, for us to explain what we were doing and how we were doing it. We did explain and spent quite a bit of time talking about the funding. You know, and they mentioned to us that WIFIA money and other avenues were available, but we also stressed the fact that we need money in the form of grants,
because
that's a big piece of what's going to get these programs to move and get off the ground. We need that. And so, you know, what we could do to share that message, we certainly tried to do it the day that they came to visit us. We also took them out to the two different sites where we were actually removing the lines
mm-hmm.
so they could get a sense of, you know, the people who are involved, the contractors, the customers, you know, the view of a neighborhood mm-hmm. and what it looks like and where we're working to do this. And so we thought that was helpful as well. But yes, we've been in contact with US EPA and trying to, you know, give them some insight to what we're experiencing and perhaps, you know, hope, you know, they'll take that information and help shape whatever they decide for the future.
As lead service lines are still out there, you all are paying obviously close attention to how your water's balanced and the chemistry as a
yes.
chemist yourself to keep any of that lead, you know, in the line and not leaching
yeah.
out and everything. I mean, that's
yeah, we've never been out of compliance,
yeah.
you know, with the lead and copper rule. But again, there's always that risk. As long as the line is there,
right.
there's that risk. And so let's recognize that risk is still there. And if we can, let's do something about it. And we just really strongly felt that we could. And basically, time's up on the lead service lines for
yeah.
us. And so we're going to figure out a way to make it happen and remove them.
Got
to
move on, right?
Yeah.
You see other communities, you know, you see what has happened in Flint. And what's your perspective on these other communities and their and the struggles they face and just trying to get this done in other places?
Yeah, and we're hoping that we can perhaps be an example to these other communities. We said early on, to our city leaders, we're going to find lead, you know,
right.
and so it's not so much that, you know, there's drama over us finding it.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to be able to react and come up with solutions once we find it. We shared that when we went into the schools and offered free testing to the schools. We told them we're going to find lead in every single one of these schools,
mm-hmm.
and we did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not so much that we found it. It was the fact that we were going to stick with the schools and come up with solutions to reduce it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just hopeful that perhaps some of the practices and program that we've put in place, other communities can learn from it. I think it's important to know, you know, this is a solution for our community, you know, and it might not work for another community, but perhaps they can take a piece of it and adapt it in their community. But it works for our community. We were very in tune with our community and knew what they might expect of us. And we fully believe that our community expected us to come up with a solution to do this. That was a driving force that we had.
Yeah.
You know, so because of that, we moved forward quickly to come up with this program. But that might not be what's needed in another community.
Sure.
But hopefully they can learn from what we're doing.
Well, Kathy, I'm glad we got to get together and chat. I encourage people to follow you on Twitter, First Lady of Water. I encourage people to get involved in exchanging some, you know, poetry, some freestyle raps on there. That really caught fire recently with everybody having a little fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But thank you so much. Great,
yes.
Great perspective.
Thanks for talking with me.
Words on Water.